Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio from Boise, Idaho. This is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook. Facebook.com/Radio Detectives. All right, well, our listener support campaign continues. You can support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. And as I've mentioned throughout the month, during the rest of the year, with all donations of $7 or more, we send access to our premium site. During the listener support campaign, we do a little bit extra to encourage the contribution. So all donations of $20 or more will receive access to my ebook, All I Needed to Know I Learned from Columbo for free, plus they'll receive another gift of their choice. Among those available at the $20 level, we have the great Colonial Radio Theater Father Brown Mysteries, starring J.T. Turner. Among the stories include The Three Tools of Death, The Arrow with Wings, and much more. So with any contributions, $20 or more, just ask, we can send you that. Also, at the $100 level, we have the very special Adventures of Harry Nile. Tremendous production from Jim French Productions in Seattle. And really captures a lot of the Golden Age spirit. Even though most of these were made on the first volume, they were in the 70s, and subsequent volumes in the 90s. They did a really good job keeping the art of radio drama alive and capturing a lot of the spirit of the era they were made, well, they were set in. Well, they were made in the 70s and 90s. They were set, actually, in the 1940s and 50s. So these are among some of the options available. You can check out all the options when you support the show at support.greatdetectives.net. All right. Well, now it's time to get into today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, the Bennett Matter, and then we will continue on with Crime for a King. But here now is the Bennett Matter, Part 5.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Hi, Johnny.
Andy, I saw George Foley. I wasn't able to make him change his plea.
Well, it was a good try, Johnny.
Jury's still out?
Yeah. That means they're arguing all the technical evidence.
I was just thinking. No one really believes we'll get Arnold Bennett.
What do you think?
I think we will. I know we will.
Well, if we can get Foley, we can get Bennett. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, the jury foreman just sent for the bailiff.
I'll be right there.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by special investigator Johnny Dollar. To the Four State Fire Insurance Corporation, 4065 Spear Boulevard, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Bennett arson fraud. Expense account item 11, 10 cents, one phone call to the hospital. The report on Arnold Bennett substantiated the newspaper story that he was recovering from the gunshot wound inflicted by his niece.
Well, one thing, Johnny, he'll be alive for us if we can go after him.
Oh, I wish it had worked with Foley. I think I could have made it work if that lawyer Eggleston hadn't been there.
Well, it's after four. You know, if that jury doesn't come in with a verdict pretty soon, they'll have to adjourn for the night.
Yeah. Want to smoke?
Yeah, thanks, Johnny. I would like one.
Here you go.
Thanks.
Hey, they're coming back in.
Hmm? Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Stuffy in this courtroom?
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Court is now in session. Be seated. Has the jury reached a verdict in the case of the state versus George Foley?
We have, sir.
Will you please read the verdict on this card?
We, the jury, find the defendant, George Foley, guilty as charged.
That does it.
Dollar! Dollar! See me, Dollar! Come see me! I got some things to tell you now.
Who's this with you, Dollar?
Andy Cord with the insurance company. Oh. Now, look, I haven't got any deals to offer, Foley. You know that.
Yeah, I know. So I took a chance. It's a lousy 5 more years.
What about Arnold Bennett?
Now, you're a little anxious. I want some information first.
They only gave us 10 minutes, Foley.
Where's Bennett now?
He's still in the hospital. He's going to be all right.
He's out, my man. That's a break.
Oh, come on, Foley. Let's have it if you have anything to say.
Can you get Bennett? Can you really get him?
I'll tell you frankly. We think we can get him with or without your help now. It doesn't make too much difference. Maybe it'll take longer without your help, but we'll get him. The fact that the court is going to convict you for having set fire to Bennett's office building is the lever we've needed. We can go after him now.
You want to help us, Foley?
I don't want to help you or your stinking insurance company, but I hate the idea of Bennett, Mr. No One Do Everything, running around eating good food and sleeping in his nice bed while I'm rotting away in prison. Sure, he hired me to fire his building. He paid me $2,500 to put the torch to that lousy building of his. He said he could throw all the blame on a guy named Tony Midas if it ever came up.
We want the facts, Foley. How'd he first contact you?
I got a friend who knows things, see? And my friend told me to contact him.
When?
A couple of days before the job.
Come on, Foley. Who's your friend?
I'm not going to tell you everything.
Did you talk to Bennett in person about firing the building?
I talked to him on the phone after my friend told me about him. Bennett said he wanted the place to go down because he's having money trouble, taxes and all. And he offered me $1,000 for the job.
Now, wait a minute, Foley. You just said you got
$2,500. I did. I hung up on him when he offered me $1,000. I called him back later on and told him I wanted $4,000. Well, we argued about it and then finally hit on the $2,500.
Did you meet him then?
Sure. No, I never met him. I saw him once and I walked by the building to look it over, but I never met him.
Bennett's niece said she saw you two together, Foley, a sworn statement.
Yeah, you know, she's a liar.
How about the money? How'd he pay it to you?
He left it for me in the check stand at the bus terminal over on 4th Street. I told him how to do that and when to leave it.
Now, let me get this straight, Foley. You made the deal to fire the building over the phone. Then you went ahead and looked at the job. You never talked to Bennett in person?
That's right.
And you made arrangements for him to pay you $2,500 by leaving it in the check stand at the bus terminal?
Yeah.
When did you make these arrangements?
The day before the job.
How'd you work it?
I just told you.
I mean the money.
Oh, half of it the first time, and after the job was over, he left the other half for me.
And you got it all?
Sure, in cash.
Why were you trying to see him in the hospital after he was shot?
You try and shake him down for another five?
Oh, brother. Come on, let's start over.
Well, what do you mean?
Oh, you're trying to sell us a bill of goods here. For what reason, I don't know, but I know this. You had to meet Bennett. You had to see him fully. You had to talk it over with him personally.
I just told you, I picked up the money in the bus terminal.
I don't believe that. Bennett wouldn't have left the money for you to pick up. He could have just gone away with it. And after the building was burned, if it had been that way, Bennett didn't have to pay you the balance. Now, when did you see him? It's pretty important to know when and where and how many times you and Bennett got together.
Thought you said you could get him whether I told you anything or not.
We can, brother. Don't ever doubt that. But if you tell us some facts, we can get him faster. All right, now. Where did you first meet him? Was it in a restaurant, someplace with people around?
No. I met him in his car. He was parked on Market Street near 5th. That's the way we arranged to meet each other over the phones.
Did anybody see you meet him?
People on the street, I guess.
When did this meeting happen?
Night I torched his building.
He paid you then?
Yeah.
The whole $2,500?
Yeah, all of it.
What'd you do with the money?
Never mind.
You still have it?
Never mind.
Oh, this is a waste of time. You aren't telling us anything.
Well, why should I?
Well, why'd you call us here if you didn't have anything to say?
Well, I'm saying something. You guys aren't listening.
We continued questioning Foley about his association with Arnold Bennett. Each time he explained it, it was a different story. The only thing he admitted was that Bennett had hired him to fire the building. As far as the details of it were concerned, they were lost in a jumble of contradictory answers he gave us. Expense account item 12, $5.60, dinner for Andrew Cord and myself. The next morning, we return to the Hall of Justice to question George Foley once more.
All right, Foley. Now, how much did you say Arnold Bennett paid you for the job?
$1,000.
You told us $2,500 one time. Another time you said $5,000. Now, come on, what was it?
$1,000.
And when did he pay you?
Right after I fired the building. I met him right afterwards down on the street in his car. He asked me if it was all set, and I told him to listen for the sirens. Pretty soon, somebody put in the alarm and the fire engines come out. He paid me that, all right. The place was three quarters gone by that time. He knew I did a good job.
Where was this you met him now?
A couple of blocks from the building.
Did anybody see you together?
No.
Where did you telephone him from?
From my place.
The same night you started the fire?
Yeah.
And he brought you the money that night, and you cased the building that night, and you started the fire. All this in one night.
Now you got it. Now that's the ticket, boy.
It became increasingly evident that Foley was attempting to convince us that he was mentally deranged. In spite of the fact that he'd already been tried and found guilty and was slated to appear at 10:30 the following morning for sentencing. It's an old trick, and with arsonists, where sanity is questioned from the beginning, a good one. However, Foley had been examined by three psychiatrists appointed by the court. I waited in the jail cell with Foley while Andy Cord went out to get copies of their findings. When he returned, we showed them to Foley. Okay, good.
Here you are, John.
Well, what are you showing me these things for?
To let you know, there's no way to get out of it now, Foley. These are from psychiatrists. All of them had a good look at you. You're sane. You're all right. You remember when they looked at you?
No.
All right, look at the dates on the paper. You can read, can't you?
Sure.
January 15th, January 16th, January 21st. Witnesses were around for all the examinations. Well?
Well?
Are you through playing games now?
Okay, Dolly, you guys win.
Come on, give us the story.
I met Arnold Bennett at the Hopkins Bar about a month before the fire. I made sure I'd meet him there.
Now, what do you mean, Foley?
Well, I've been setting fires for a living for a long time now. I always have a list of people like Bennett who could use a fire. They get around. I knew he was in trouble 4 or 5 years ago with the income tax people. They sent a guy to prison for cover-up.
Tony Midas.
Yes, Tony Midas. I figured he'd be needing another one pretty soon, so we had a drink. I brought it up.
Who paid for the drinks?
He did.
Who saw you together?
The bartender. His name is Alfred. There was a maitre d' there, a couple of people at the tables. I put the proposition up to him. How'd he like to have his building burnt down and collect his $500,000 to get himself out of trouble? Well, he said he'd like that fine. I told him it cost him $5,000 in advance. He said he couldn't raise that much, but he did manage to get $3,500 together. I took it, and I did the job.
What'd you do with the money?
I still got it.
Where?
It's not going to do me any good now. I buried it in a gallon can of vacant lot over by the tower. I could show you where.
Okay. We'll get you to do that.
Swell, I'll be glad. Hey.
What?
I can send Bennett up the same way you're sending me up.
Huh?
I can testify against him at his trial.
The next morning at 10:30, George Foley received the maximum sentence. 2 hours later, charges were filed against Arnold Bennett, naming him for conspiracy, arson, attempted defraud, and collusion. A warrant was issued for his immediate arrest, but it was never served. Arnold Bennett died in the hospital that night. In a way, you could still say that no one ever beat him. He beat himself. Expense account item 13, $87.50, hotel and board in San Francisco. Item 14, another $125, transportation back to Hartford. Item 15, $35, miscellaneous. Expense account total, $1,440.37. Remarks? Nothing. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, there'll be another intriguing story for you beginning next Monday night.
Next week, the Fathom Five matter. Death on the high seas. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baeff, Stacey Harris, Chet Stratton, Will Wright, Marvin Miller, Hans Conried, Edgar Barrier, and Parley Bear. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, a downbeat end as they don't catch their man. But in some ways you felt the insurance company was kind of, you know, they were kind of extending their goal perhaps a little bit beyond what it needed to be, because ultimately in the end what they needed to do was to stop them from being able to defraud the insurance company. And so the estate doesn't get that extra money. And so I guess that I could consider that a win. The only thing they lost was having to deal with the arsonist. That's what really makes things seem futile, because they went to all this trouble to get the information from the arsonist. And, he basically ends up not giving them anything because the guys, you know, because their suspect, dies and they can't try him. Well, I should mention, this episode was actually adapted from three different scripts by E. Jack Newman. It borrowed from Jeff Regan Investigator script, The Man Who Came Back, The Adventures of Sam Spade, The Champion Caper, and borrowed from an episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Elliot Champion Matter. This is one of those plots that E. Jack Newman just reused and reused. All right, well, that will actually do it for Johnny Dollar, but now it's time for Crime for King, Part 2.
Carter Brown, Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense, based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
The yacht moved through a heavy swell at a fast clip. my thoughts moved through a heavy head at a feeble crawl. I looked around me. The cabin was fit for a king, but this king's name was Roger, and why Roger King had been drugged and then dragged on board, I hadn't the faintest idea. All I knew was that first I was working for Pulvey, trailing Elise and Kreese. Then I was working for Elise, trailing Pulvey. And in the course of that, Pulvey's secretary, Marcia Oliver, fed me a dope martini, and here I was, all set for a cruise to the Caribbean.
Ah, decided to come up for a breath of fresh air, Mr. King.
That's right, Captain Harris, and it feels very fresh.
Yeah, the swell's getting heavier. We look like having some fog. Do you have breakfast?
Yes, thanks. You're on a first-rate service for Shanghai passengers.
We do our best.
You don't feel like doing better still and telling me why I'm here and who owns this boat.
I'm sorry, I can't oblige you.
Well, no harm in trying.
Now, Mr. King, I think you'd better go below.
I've had my quarter of fresh air, huh?
I'd prefer you in your cabin. I'll have one of the crew conduct you.
Well, if I'm going to be incarcerated for any long periods, do you mind if I borrow one of your bottles to keep me company?
Not at all. There's a good supply in the saloon. You can stop off and pick up some on your way down.
I didn't notice the rest of the day pass, due largely to the bottle, whose contents transferred from it to me made things seem less bewildering. And then it happened. I was flung from the bunk to the floor, the empty bottle still in my hand. I picked myself up and tried the door. It was locked. The engines had stopped. Up above, I heard footsteps running along the deck. And after a while, there was silence, except for a single sinister sound. The plash of running water. The cabin tilted to a crazy angle, and I could see the water creeping in under the door. And I was forced to the comfortless conclusion that I'd been left to my fate. And then I was proved wrong.
Well, hi there, sailor. How's the hornpipe?
You're drunk.
That's right, Captain.
Perhaps just as well. We hit a reef, Mr. King. Got too close inshore in this fog.
Well, never mind. There are plenty of yachts.
It's bad luck for you, though. If this hadn't happened, you could have enjoyed a 10-day cruise. And then we'd have dumped you someplace. And that would have been it. But as things are now, I'm afraid I'll have to kill you.
Why, you bold, bad boy.
You see, we can't take any risk of you being around on the 18th. That was the whole reason for getting you aboard. To keep you out of the way till after the 18th. Now, well, I'm sorry, King. I'll have to give it to you.
What, another bottle?
No, a bullet.
Oh, you're kidding.
No, I'm not. There's already about a foot of water in here. I'm going to shoot you, and you'll go down with a yacht.
Hey, I think you're really serious.
Perfectly serious. Goodbye, King.
Oh, no! I'll bet you never figured I was such a good shot on an empty bottle.
The bottle I had thrown in desperation had struck Harris just above the temple. If I'd been stone cold sober, I don't think I'd ever have done it. I left him lying there in the water, which was rapidly rising in the cabin, and made my way to the deck. I looked at the reef on which the yacht had struck. Then at the waves now pounding hungrily against the sides of the vessel. Suddenly it lurched onto my feet. That told me as plainly as words that it was my time to get off. The reef below didn't look inviting, but it looked safer than the yacht. I swung out over the guardrail and let myself drop. I landed on the rock on all fours, and as I picked myself up and stumbled away from the yacht, there was a harsh, rending sound. I turned to see the yacht slowly turn sideways and disappear. Then I headed towards the end of the reef. I remember staggering across the slippery rock surface, and then the sudden shock of the ice-cold water, and nothing more.
Take it easy now. Come on, drink some more. Not so fast now. Gently, Dutch.
Yeah, what's this? A bed? Blankets? Where am I?
In bed in my cottage, Mr. King. Come on, have a little more of this brandy.
Oh. Hey, how'd I get here?
I found you on the beach. You must have made it to the end of the reef and swum the rest of the way.
Don't remember. Only remember the water.
I saw the yacht strike. Then I came down to the beach later. I saw an upturned dinghy out at sea. And then I found you. What about the others?
Don't know.
Well, perhaps you'd better not talk anymore, Mr. King.
You know my name.
Well, when I stripped off your clothes, I took out your wallet. Naturally, I looked through it, but cash, your safe, your license, your money, everything. My name is Wallace, by the way. You Wallace.
Well, Mr. Wallace, I guess I owe my life to you. That seems to entitle you to the whole story. And that's it, Mr. Wallace. Right up to the time I saw the yacht go under. The rest of it, well, you know.
It's an incredible story. What are you going to do now?
Going back to where I came from. I'm annoyed enough now to want a piece of revenge. And another thing, too. I'm curious about that date Harris mentioned, the 18th. I'd like to find out why I had to be kept away until after that. And what exactly is going to happen on the 18th?
What about the wreck?
I've been thinking about that. You saw an upturned dinghy. Looks as if the rest of the crew must have drowned. I know Harris is dead, and that leaves me the only survivor. I'd like to keep quiet about the wreck for two reasons. One, because to explain Harris's death would be awkward. And two, because with Polvy and his secretary thinking I'm dead, gives me an advantage. But of course, your conscience may insist on reporting the thing, Mr. Wallace. Well, it's up to you. You saved my life, and I won't argue with you on your decision, whatever it may be.
I believe your story, Roger. It's too fantastic to be anything but the truth. And I'm only too happy to keep quiet about the wreck. You see, I'm wanted in 4 states for forgery.
It was good to get home. It was good to roll into my own bed and sleep 18 hours straight. It was close to lunchtime of the next day when I got to my office and found an irate note from my employer, Miss St. Creese. I flicked the telephone dial to the number in her note.
Hello?
Good morning, Elise. Roger King speaking.
Oh.
I got your note. The tone of it seemed rather angry.
With good reason. Where have you been the last 3 days?
Around.
Around is expensive at $200. That is the amount I paid you, remember? I want more than that.
You get it. I've been busy. I couldn't wait around my office for you to call.
This had better be good. Otherwise, I shall ask Johnny to call on you and convince you that it is better to produce results.
Johnny?
He was driving my car the other night, remember? Johnny bends iron bars before breakfast, simply because he has to work off his surplus energy.
That ape. If he gets near me, I'm liable to forget I'm trying to be a gentleman and break a chair over his head.
Oh, I'll tell him that. It will worry him for weeks.
Now, look, leaving your playmate Johnny out of the picture for a while, I'm onto something really good.
What is it?
I can't tell you yet, not until I'm really sure.
Mr. King, this begins to sound like stalling to me.
Now, just give me 2 more days. After all, as long as you know before the 18th, it's all right, isn't it?
Very well. I'm prepared to give you 2 more days. But if I don't hear from you by then, you will really be in trouble. That I can guarantee, Mr. King.
So, the 18th means something to you too, baby. The question is, what? And I figure there's only one person who can tell me that. You learn all kinds of handy hints in the private eye profession. One of them is how to use a knife blade to open a window. I thought I had a good half hour before Marcia Oliver got home. More than enough time for a quick look around. The platinum blonde's wardrobe was full of clothes. And if those clothes had been bought out of her salary as a stenographer, then, brother, I was going to take up shorthand and typing. I looked around for a hiding place. Full-length drapes over the living room window seemed to be as good a place as any. I arranged the drapes carefully, leaving myself a crack to see through, took a deep breath, and settled down to sleep.
Here we are, honey. I'll get us a drink.
Uh-uh, baby. There's something I need more than liquor. Come here.
Robbie, take it easy.
You're gonna tell me you don't like it?
No, honey, but there's no time. You can't stay here more than a minute. Palvy's coming.
Palvy? One of these days I'm gonna wring his neck.
After the 18th, you can do it with pleasure, baby. But not before. He's too valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes me sick when I think of that slug and you.
Then don't think of it. It won't be for long now. Come on. Let me give you a drink and get going.
Skip the drink. I'll just have the same again.
Now, you must get out of here, Rodney.
Okay, okay. But I won't be happy till the whole thing's over.
That's the day I'm living for, our two lover.
Goodbye, baby.
Bye.
You can pour one for me, too, Marcia. Only this time you can skip the Mickey Finn.
You're dead.
Uh-uh. You mean I should be dead, but I'm not.
How did you get in here?
Through the window. I've been behind the curtains for quite a while.
Oh. Well, I don't know what you want here, but Mr. Palvey will be calling very soon.
For his regular visit, huh? Which explains all that expensive clothing you own.
If he finds you here, he'll turn you over to the police.
I don't think so, baby. Not after that little sea trip you arranged for me. You and Palvey, I presume.
I
think you'd better give me a little information. If you don't, I'll tell Palvey of the pretty little scene I just witnessed between you and dear Rodney. I'm sure he'd love to hear all about it.
What do you want?
For a start, the 18th. That's a date everyone seems to be interested in. What happens then?
I don't know.
Now, baby, don't start with the fairy stories.
Palvey says he's pulling off a big deal then. There'll be a stack of money in it, and I'll get some. That's all I know.
Well, that could be true, I guess. And why did you slip me that dope martini?
I was scared when you said you followed me home. I thought Palvey's wife might have put you on to me. I wanted to keep you here till I could get in touch with Palvey and ask him what to do.
And he suggested the sea trip?
Yes.
I don't think I believe you, but I can wait. When Palvey comes tonight, find out something definite about the 18th. I'll call back around midnight. You'd better know then, or I'll blow the whole works to Pal Palvey. So it's up to you, baby.
Welcome back. Now, I have to wonder what Roger King expects to get from the help of the secretary, because nobody, including Roger King himself, actually believes that she doesn't know what's going to happen on the 18th. But we do have, a decent twist in the story. And certainly, you know, we're halfway through it, so there's a lot of time for this to develop. So I'm going to definitely look forward to seeing what happens in the next part. Well, now we do turn to some listener comments and feedback. Mark emails in regarding Whitney Kent and the High Fly and the High Sky Hoodoo story. That Kent guy doesn't know jack about aircraft. He mispronounced the aircraft terms. To paraphrase, the Mach readout was 1, the speed of sound. He pronounced it a soft Mach, a soft, pronounced it Mach, soft CH, and it should be Mach, hard K. Word comes from the polymath Ernst Mach. My formative years were on supersonic Air Force bases. That's a good point. You know, I'm going to defer to Australian audience members to see if there's any local variations on some of those pronunciations. The thing with most of the Carter Brown mysteries is they really do try to set these stories up as if they are happening in the United States. But occasionally there's linguistic things that I think you know, just kind of natural to Australian audiences, and also, you know, just to make it sound not too foreign, that do kind of make it clear. I remember one episode, I believe it was back during the Nightmare for Night, where someone mentioned going to buy petrol, which isn't something that would be said by someone in the United States, which is where the characters were supposed to be at. So I'm wondering if there is some local variation. I'll defer to our Australian listeners, who, according to stats, were our fourth highest source of listeners in terms of country, U.S., Canada, U.K., and Australia. And then Germany 5th, and everybody else further back. So any Australian listeners, love to hear from you if there was some local variation. Finally, I have this comment from EC Fan regarding the app. The latest update Oh, sorry. This one's from Michelle Myers, excuse me. I love this app. Adam does a great job setting the stage for the various shows as well as helping to give historical perspectives for each show. Great job, Adam. Look forward to listening for years to come. Well, thanks so much, Michelle. That will do it for today. Join us back here tomorrow. We will continue on with the lineup. Then coming on Monday, another Johnny Dollar serial. And then on Friday, we continue with Crime for a King. In the meantime, your comments are appreciated. Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.